Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good morning and welcome to The Line here on Heritage Radio. My name is Eli Sussman. I'm the co-chef, co-owner of Samisa Restaurant in Williamsburg. Just a quick plug here to help you plan your summer fun. We'll be opening locations of Samisa and our burger spot, Ed and Bev's, up and down the boardwalk at Jacob Reese Beach in the Rockaways. So you've got two locations of Samisa and two locations of Ed and Bev's to get your burger, dog, and shawarma fix all summer long. So if you're looking for an awesome way to spend a sunny day, come down and see us. We're at Jacob Reese Beach. And all the food vendors, the bars, ping pong, the ice cream stands, and all the live music starts this Memorial Day weekend at noon. My guest today is no stranger to multiple locations and juggling many projects, and today we'll hear from him about how he grew his business into the sprawling Philadelphia-based restaurant group it is today. Mark Vetri is a native of Philadelphia. He was classically trained in Italy, and he's the chef and founder of the Vetri family of restaurants. He's been named Best New Chef by Food & Wine, and he's also been named Best Chef Mid-Atlantic by the James Beard Foundation. He's written several cookbooks. He's heavily involved in the Philadelphia community, and in 2015, he embarked on a new business relationship with Urban Outfitters. Mark, thanks for coming on the line.
Yo, man, how you doing? Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
I want to hear first a little bit about, because you're so ingrained in Philadelphia.
Philly's my home,
you
man.
You grew up in Philly.
Yeah.
Tell me about what life was like growing up in Philly as a kid. What area of town did you grow up in? And was it a cool neighborhood? Was it a dangerous neighborhood?
So I'm actually from like the Northeast area, and that's like basically the burbs.
Okay.
So it was a nice area, not a scary area, you know. And it was pretty just, you know, the normal, like, you know, suburban, you know, the lifestyle, you know, we had like the Little League and all that stuff, you know, mom and dad worked and, you know, lived in a house, had a yard, you know, the whole deal, you know, went to, you know, the local high school, you know, the Abington High School. And, you know, just, nothing really, I mean, out of the ordinary. My father's family lived down in like the South Philly area. You know, so we used to head down there on like the weekends and everything. And, you know, we'd have like the big meals, you know, the meatballs, the lasagna, the macaroni, and all that stuff. Like, and that was kind of the highlight.
Grandma ran that show?
Okay. Oh, yeah. She ran the show. She made everything. And, you know, we had the whole family there, my uncle and their kids and, you know, the aunts and uncles from my father's side. And, that was like the Sunday meal, you know, the old families from Italy, you know, they all had them, you know. So my father's family was, you know, from Sicily. So, so that was the big thing. So the ride down there was like, you know, it was the 30 minutes and, you know, that was like 9th Street, you know, which is the market there. I don't know if you're familiar with it. 9th Street where all like the vendors are. And, you know, way back then it was all the folks, you know, it was all the folks from Italy, you know, mm-hmm. you know, like the mob ran it back then,
old school. Yeah, old school.
The barber shops with the old guys from Italy sitting there cutting the hair, you know, doing the numbers in like the back room and shit, you know.
People really they associate Philly with, unfortunately or fortunately, with the cheesesteak, right?
The cheesesteak.
For me, it's Dr. J. What images when you were a kid, if you can really harken back, like what are some sights and smells that you recall from Philadelphia? Like, you know, what is it, your grandma's meatballs? Is there something that just really to you is like super Philly in the 60s, 70s, 80s when you're growing up?
Well, 70s and 80s. Let's not go back. I'm only 50. I'm not 60s, man. I was 4 years old. I was born in 66. So, yeah. You know, there's nothing really like I would say, you know, specifically, you know, like of that. I mean, the memories that I have are all around basically the weekend, the Sunday, the family meals. You know, that was always, we did lots of things. But for some reason, and I don't know, I mean, obviously, I think that everybody sort of has the memories that, you know, sort of, you know, hop into their head. But my memories are, you know, heading down to South Philly, the meatballs, the stuffed artichokes, you know, the bacala, all that stuff. I just used to look forward to the weekend. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, I don't think that I was a very social guy, you know, so the school thing, you know, I didn't have a lot of, wasn't really heading over to, you know, to the neighbor's house or, mm-hmm. or, you know, so I just always really looked forward, you know, to the weekend for the
family time,
the meals, the family time. That was
the progression from you going to Italy. Obviously, seems really logical now because you have all those memories, and you know that's sort of where your family coming over from Sicily. Yeah. So, how do you connect with your job? Is it Bergamo?
Bergamo, yeah.
Bergamo.
Yeah,
so how do you connect with? Did you work at a restaurant? Did you work at a pasta shop?
So I was at a restaurant out there. So you know, so I was out in the Los Angeles area. It was 1990, mm-hmm. So I went out there to go to the Musicians Institute.
For guitar.
Yeah, for guitar. And I still work nights in the like in the restaurants, you know, because I had to make a living somehow.
Right.
So then I, you know, so I had the band, and I was, you know, and I was actually, you know, when I was in the restaurants at night, so I was working for Wolfgang Puck.
Okay.
And there's a restaurant out there named Valentino's. There's a guy named Mr. Salvaggio. He owned it. So I used to stop in there because, you know, he used to stop in the restaurant. He knew the restaurants really well. He was actually from Italy. So he liked me a lot, and I was out there for about 3 or 4 years, and I just wasn't really, liking it out there. The Los Angeles area just wasn't that just wasn't, you know, the vibe out there, the food out there. I didn't like it. You know, so I asked them, hey, you know, do you know anyone in Italy? Because I'd really want to go to Italy. That's kind of what I, that's like where I got to go. I just was like, you know, I really wanted it. So I said, well, he knows a guy. He's in northern Italy. He has a restaurant. He has a room. He said, you can go. You can live there. You can work. So I said, all right. So he wrote a note. He wrote me this note on a piece of paper. He said, head to this restaurant and hand the owner this note. And I said, that's it. He's like, that's it. All right. So... super, so I got a one-way plane school. Ticket. This is completely old school. I was like, he's like, I got a guy. All right, well, that's fine. So I bought a, you know, one-way flight, which now, you know, you're not buying a one-way flight anywhere, right? You know, nobody's buying a one-way flight. Landed there, walked into the restaurant, handed the guy the note. He looked at the note. He looked at me. He rolled his eyes. He's like, not again. You know, obviously this.
Yeah.
This actually happens. He showed me the room and I started.
How long did you stay?
I ended up living there for about 2 years. I was in that restaurant for about 6 months. And then when you're in Italy, you know, then you work in a restaurant, you know, You meet folks who are, you know, who worked in other restaurants. Like, oh, you should work there for months. You should work there for months. So I just started meeting folks, and I just, you know, sort of you know, work here for a month, there for a month, here for 6 weeks, here for 8 weeks. So I went all over. I went to Venice for a month. I went down to, you know, the Rome area for 6 months. I went here, down there, And I ended up staying there for about 2 years, year and a half, something like that. And and I just went over there with $1,000, and I just made that
stretch
last, you know. You know, like every now and then, the restaurant owners would, like, you know, they'd let me have a little bit of money. And you know, they let
but
me
for
have
the
it.
Most part, you were really just stodging.
Stodging, yeah.
Wow.
For and free, yeah.
So I assume that you learned how to make pasta.
Beyond, I learned a lot about pasta.
Beyond learning how to make pasta, what were some other things that you worked on? Did you do baking? Or,
you know,
what did they let you touch? What did they say?
They let you do anything.
They let you do anything.
Yeah,
that's
like
cool.
This is Italy, you know. In other areas, I'm not going to name them. So I don't want to start a war here. But in Italy, it's like, there's no secrets, you know. You know, hey, what's that? Oh, this is here's where it's from. This is awesome. You know, you got to learn this. The chefs there, whenever, like, the orders, you know, would arrive, they'd be like, Mark, look at this, look at this, look at this fish. Here's where it's from. Here's, you know, the vegetables, the meats. And that's really... I think it's less, I mean, about what I learned than just the whole the sensibility of, like, what happens in Italy, using the land, you know, the sharing of, you know, the knowledge. You know, there's no, like, you know, the chefs in Italy, they're not like yelling, they're not like, you know. There's none of that.
There's an enjoyment level in the kitchen, right?
I mean, listen, it's like still hard work. But I mean, I've heard, you know, stories of, like, you know, other blind cooks, you know, staging in, you know, like, Michelin star restaurants here and there, and just the yelling and the, you know,
plates throwing.
Yeah, plates throwing, crashing. Like, I was like, I don't even understand that. You know, it's just nothing that I've, you know, like I've only heard about it. You know, I've never actually, you know, had, I've, never actually seen it, you know. So, but that's what I learned in Italy, you know, just like the love of the food, where it's from, what it's all about.
What brought you back from Italy to the United States? Did you run out of money?
Well, I ran out of money, and my friend was getting married, so I was like, yeah, let me go back.
So you come back to the United States. Do you immediately jump into a food job, or
yeah, yeah? I mean,
where did you start out?
Well, I actually moved out to I had still all of my stuff in you know, Los Angeles. It was in someone's house, and I don't know where it was, but anyway, so I went back there, worked around, you know, I opened up a restaurant, in Alaska. It's a long story. I don't think we have time right now. But I ended up
where
there
was
for
it in
a
Alaska?
Year. It was in what's it called? Juneau, Alaska.
Okay.
Beautiful area. Yeah. I spent about 9 months there. I mean, opened up a restaurant, you know, right on the water for someone. But it was a great experience. You know, I mean, I opened up a restaurant from nothing, you know, so that was awesome. From there, I actually moved to the city, Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, the chef at up on the Upper East Side, the Bell Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I opened that. That was 1996. So I was the chef there for about 2 years, and then I was 30 years old, and I was just about to turn 31, and I had this, you know, sort of thing. I don't know what it was, but it was in my head, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to open up a restaurant by when I'm 30 years old. I mean, I just always, you know, I mean, I just always thought that. And then I was, you know, so I was almost 31 years old, and I was like, oh shit, man, I didn't open up a restaurant. So
you missed your own deadline.
So I said to the owner, I was like, man, I got to go, you know, I got to open up a restaurant. He's like, what are you talking about? You know, we're doing awesome here. You're making a lot of money. I'm like, yeah, but man, I said to myself, you know, when I'm 30 years old, I'm going to open up a restaurant. I'm going to be 31. Man, I got to go. And he's like, all right. So I gave him like a month notice. And then I started looking for, you know, my own restaurant.
In Philly? A space in Philly?
I started looking in you know, the Manhattan area. Mm. But once I saw the numbers, I was like, I can get the fuck out of here.
Need to get back to Philly. It's crazy, you know, so you spent 2 years in Italy, you spent time in Los Angeles, yeah. Juneau, Alaska, three
New York.
Beautiful yeah. places. New York, one of the greatest yeah. cities in the entire world.
Yeah.
Philly, another incredible city. It pulls you back. What
family. You know?
So it's family,
you know,
and also
yeah.
just kind of barrier to entry,
the,
right?
The support system, you know, my mom and dad were there still. You know, I still had a lot of, you know, things happening and, you know, there. And then, you know, also, so obviously, once I started looking there, I obviously saw, you know, the numbers made a lot more sense there than New York City.
Those pesky rent numbers, really.
It was crazy, you know.
Philly's still about going to be, it's
still pretty
half or 66% of what New York is, probably?
I'd say it's...
Number-wise?
I'd say it's a third.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ooh. I mean,
you just made a bunch of people really bummed out.
Like, I've heard some of the numbers here for rent, like over $100, $120 a square foot, $130. Yeah.
I think you can pay, I think in Soho, Lower East Side, I think it's going for like $145 or yeah. $150 right now a square foot.
You're talking 40, 50 bucks in Philly. Like, jeez. Like, you know, I mean, and then there's obviously some,
sure.
some nice areas where you're going to hit 80, but 80's like reach,
80s, like you can't even find that in most places in Brooklyn anymore.
In the dumps.
That's wild. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about Philly and what happens there. We'll be right back here on Heritage Radio.
Bob's Red Mill is a proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network and a big supporter of organic farmers. Ray and Tom Williams are two farmers who have worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray shares what their relationship with Bob's Red Mill means to them.
We thought that for over the long term, we thought it would make sense, better sense for the soil. Also, we thought that it was something that would improve the quality of the food supply. We're lucky in that we're working with Bob's Red Mill. We're part of a regional food network. With Bob is a fundamental relationship and cornerstone to that. We also work with other best-of-class people in the Northwest, and we're thankful for the long-term relationship that's brought good things to the soil and good things to our long-term farm economic plans. We appreciate his attitude toward absolutely high standard for the benefit of his customers. We take pride in meeting those standards.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Welcome back to The Line. I'm here with Philadelphia native Mark Vetri. He is the chef and co-founder of Vetri Family Restaurants. So we were talking about how you were cooking in New York.
Yeah.
You ran the numbers. Your family was in Philly, and it kind of brought you back. I'm curious, did you meet your partner, Jeff Benjamin, before you opened the first restaurant? Or did you do the first restaurant and then he joined up?
So I met him here.
Okay.
He was in New York. He was working for Aramark. Then he was working for the Restaurant Associates. And he was actually friends with my younger brother Adam, who lived here. So Adam used to eat at the restaurant with him, and so we just got to be like, we just got to hang out a little bit, and I was looking for someone to to open up the restaurant, to run it with me, and I was looking for, I was looking for someone from Italy, and this was 1998. It was like May 1998, and I was looking for someone. And then Adam, my brother, mentioned, "Hey, he's looking to leave the Restaurant Associates, and he's looking for something. He would, he'd be happy to move, to Philly." So we just kind of made it work.
So what's the first spot that you open, and where?
Vetri.
And where is it?
13th and Spruce, Vetri. It's the original Lebecque Finn. I don't know if you know that. Lebecque Finn was one of like the main restaurants, that was in the city that, sort of started everything, they were there, from 1969 to 1983. And then they moved over to, this other area. But, I mean, anyone who's a little bit older than you probably would be like, back then, holy shit, that's amazing. You know, one knows about it anymore because it isn't.
What does
there
it
anymore.
Mean to have taken over that space, though, with all that history? How did that come about?
You know what? It was a restaurant that was actually named Chanterelle, when I was looking at it. And I was just looking around, right? I was just looking around and I had some investors and I was looking at larger area, larger rooms. But, you know, whenever I, you know, said, oh, this one's going to be awesome, you know, I'm going to need $700,000. The investors were like, oh, you know, let me see, you know, I'm not sure. I was like, all right, this isn't going to work out. So this one, it had 30 seats. It was really little. The guy was asking $75,000 for everything that was in it, liquor license and everything that was in it. 30 seat restaurant. So I got the business loan, from the government, for $100,000. And I had $30,000 saved up, and I maxed out Namex and I got a few thousand here and there. And I opened up Vetri for $150,000,
Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's not happening much now. Yeah. But it was 30 seats, the guy, the last restaurant there, he was there for 6 years, it wasn't large enough for him. So he was actually, moving on to another restaurant. And it's the restaurant there, it was Le Bec Fin, it was Chanterelle, it was another restaurant called Ciboulette. But it's legendary, in that area. Le Bec Fin, obviously.
And then now you get to the biggest one, carry on the tradition. Yeah. You've been there for such a long time that now you're a Philly institution.
Next year is our 20-year anniversary. So.
It's crazy.
It's nuts.
One of the craziest things is that you opened a restaurant and made it 20 years, which is exceptional in any city because restaurants often don't make it past 5.
Yeah.
So to make it 20 and then to be able to spin that off into other restaurants as well, before we kind of go into the expansion, mm-hmm. I'm curious, the saying is that the hardest is from 1 to 2. Yeah. And then after that, it gets a little bit easier. How do you feel about that?
What was
hard for you about starting off with you and Jeff trying to make it happen? After Vetri was a success in some capacity, you decided to do another. How did you reach that point?
What is that though? Right. It's a success, right? I mean, there was things written about it, so does that make it? I mean, we didn't start making money till nine years in, I mean, remember it was only 30 seats, and it was just me and him. So I think what actually made it easier for us is that we waited 9 years, to open up another restaurant. Lots of folks nowadays, they open up a restaurant and they're already thinking, oh, man, I got to open this. I got to open this. I got to do a book. I got to do this. I got to get on the Iron Chef. I got to get on the Food Network. I got to do this. I got to do that. We just worked. We were just in the restaurant, 6 days a week, and when we weren't there, the restaurant wasn't open. We did that for 9 years, and I think that really helped us out. I mean, after 9 years, we were just full every night, so then we could open up something because there was, the want to, they'd folks wanted something else, you know. So we opened up the Osteria. That was the second one. And it just made it easier. I don't think it was, like, super hard, you know, from one to, you know, that. I don't think it was, like, I don't think that was the hardest, you know, thing about the road that we're on.
What's so fascinating about the growth of a restaurant group is that a single restaurant, 30 seats, it's just you and Jeff. There's other people in the kitchen.
Sure.
Then you go to the next one and you need a CDC and you need a GM and then you got another one and now you got two CDCs and four sous chefs and two GMs. So how do you manage that infrastructure? Like, do you just kind of like, learn as you go?
When I figure it out, I'll let you know. You know, that's the hardest thing, right? You know, and that's the hardest thing, you know, with all of us, you know, because this is new, you know. You know, so when I opened, you know, back in 1998, you know, like the chefs had like one restaurant, you know. There was no restaurant organizations that had like six restaurants or seven. There was like the guy who had one restaurant, and there was like the guys that had like 900 restaurants. There was no like 15.
It was like Burger
30
King
restaurants.
And like Vinny's Pizzeria.
Yeah, that like that's it. Yeah. You know, so now there's this new thing, right? Of like these young guys. I mean, like me, but you know. Now we're older.
You're a young guy, so I didn't mean 50. To say you were born in the '50s. I apologize for that.
But you know, so we're all running the, you know, 8, 9, 15 restaurants, and we're all like, you know, asking, you know, one another, hey man, you know, how many of this, do you guys have? You guys need a CFO? You have a CEO? Do you have a marketing director? Do you have this? Do you have that? We're all just kind of, you know, just learning about it because mm-hmm. It never happened, you know. So that's where the urban thing sort of helps us out because they have that experience, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. So besides. The obvious synergy, which is you're Philly and urban is Philly.
They're Philly.
How does that come to be? I mean, can you talk about some of like the broad strokes, like the deal points? It's like, I know that besides Vetri on Spruce, you sold the restaurants,
yes.
right?
Yeah, everything. But yeah.
But you're obviously still involved.
So we run them all still. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're still involved with them all. I mean, that was just a...
So you have like a management deal on your own old restaurants, kind of? Like?
No, not at all.
So
they own them.
They own them.
They
okay.
own them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They own them. We run them. I mean, obviously, they run them also now, mm-hmm. you know, with us because they have the infrastructure, which is really what everybody has to have because, you know, once you have like... The roaming managers and the roaming chefs and the roaming this, you know, that's a lot of money, you know, and like, you know, the restaurant, the margins are like starting to go smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So, yeah. You know, you're not making like, you know, like those, like if you're lucky, you're going to make, you know, 4%, 5%, you know, that's not a lot. You know, so the reason this thing happened is, I mean, who really knows why it happened? It's really nuts. But they were looking for a lot of years for this relationship, you know, because they have their stores and, you know, obviously the retail, you know, stuff that's starting to get, you know, super hard. You know, a lot of retail stores are having a lot of issues. I mean, that's, everybody knows that. You know, so they were looking for something to, maybe stick near the store to like say, hey, folks, you can kind of, you know, if you stop in the restaurant, if you could eat something, if you could walk into this the store and, you know, and you could, you know, sort of have a little, you know, this synergy there. You know, so they really liked, I think, initially the pizzeria. You know, so we opened the one. And, I mean, you know, we loved it also. We were like, hey, 19% food costs. This is pretty cool, you know. Like, that's not obviously the normal thing, you know. So we were also thinking, like, hey, we'd like to open up a lot of these, you know. And then we saw, like, the Shake Shack thing happen. We're like, wow, you know, that's cool.
There's a potential.
I don't think we're going to hit that, you know. But, you know, that's you know, sort of a, you know, once-in-a-lifetime thing. But, hey, maybe we can open up 30 of these things. You know, so we had always sort of sort of funded, we always went to the bank. I always like refinanced my house and, you know, signed everything away on the dotted line. And, you know, we're starting to get older and I'm like, you know what? I don't really want to, you know, refinance my house again, you know? So let's look for some money. So we started looking and, you know, and everyone who was offering stuff, they wanted a lot, you know. And then, you know, so we already had the relationship, you know, with Urban Outfitters, and they heard that, you know, that we were looking for someone, you know. So they said, hey, you know, and they just offered us option, you know, what if we buy the pizzeria? We're like, oh, you know, that's an option. What if we just, you know, let you have a little bit of money for the pizzeria? You know, it's an option. You could have this much of it. What if, you know, what if this? What if that? What if we just
bought it all?
What if we just own the whole restaurant company? Well, I don't know. That's an option. And we started to, then we started to discuss it. And then, yeah, so there was really only one thing that, you know, I'm not selling, you know, the original restaurant Vetri. That's my baby. It's only 30 seats anyway.
What's it going to do for them?
It's not scalable. Yeah. It's nothing. But I have to own that. And then it just kind of went, you know. And
what did you feel like the day? So you sign, you wake up the next mm-hmm. day, and you realize that you and Jeff and your team has been working for years, and you mm-hmm. built all this up. What does it feel like that day when you wake up? And
it's the same thing, you know.
Same?
I mean, for me it is, but I sort of manifest things in, like, my own way. Like I still look at all of, you know, the restaurants like they're mine, you know. And you know, when I'm in Philly, I still roam all the restaurants every night, and I still look at them like they're mine, you know. So, even though I don't own them anymore, I mean, you know, we all still sort of run them like, you know, we own them. Mm-hmm. So nothing's really, I mean, you know, so I get asked that a lot. I mean, obviously, and you know, I don't really have an answer because I don't feel like my life is now like this when it actually was like that. Like, I just feel like I own the restaurants. You know, someone's helping me out with them. And now we have the infrastructure to maybe, you know, make history, maybe open up a lot of restaurants. So I don't know.
When you say that you roam the restaurants and you still go through them and you still feel like they're your restaurants, which they are, I'm curious, from a leadership role, from the owner, founder position, are you like a real granular guy? Are you going in and like looking in the walk-in and like looking in low boys? Are you like sitting down and having a meeting with your CDC and saying, what do you need? What can I do? What's new? Like, how does your management style manifest itself since you have multiple restaurants and it's a lot, you know?
I just always kind of like to see who needs what, you know? Obviously, when I'm at a restaurant, I'm going to look around and I'm going to see things. I'm like, hey, you know, whose is that? Why is it left out? Why is that like that? Hey guys, you know, that's not really nice. You should really leave this. Like, hey, you know, your knife is, you know, you need to sharpen it. You know, who made this thing? How come they don't have this on the table? I mean, that's just normal for I think any owner. But then there's also the other half of it where I just, you know, sort of help them figure out what they need. So I'll be on the phone with, you know, one of the chefs from, you know, from a restaurant. I'll be like, hey man, how's it going today? Oh man, you know, everything's awesome, chefy. Yeah, I got this in. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, what are you making with it? It'll be like this. Oh, you know what? I used to make this with that, and it was awesome. Oh, you know what? That's awesome. We're gonna use that. So it's mostly like, you know, things like that. But I'm just there. You know, to basically help.
I want to know what still motivates you and keeps you growing. You've accomplished a lot by any measure. You've done many restaurants. You've done them big and small, high-end, fast casual. Sure. You've done books. I'm curious, what do you feel like you have left to do?
I think I got everything left, you know, to do. I mean, I've been like, you know, I mean, I get so excited. I mean, when somebody makes, you know, something new, or when I see something, the internet now, social media, we're doing things now that like we could have never had, you know, 20 years ago. Sometimes I announce these events on like, you know, the internet at like 9:00 a.m. and by 9:05 for that evening, they're sold out with a wait list of like 90 people, you know? So I get so excited about that stuff. I can have my upstairs room at a veteran restaurant, you know, that's empty, and I could say something like, hey, you know, I'm gonna make some roasted lamb tonight, you know, we're gonna serve it family style, you know, first come first serve, and I'll announce that at 9:00, and at 9:04, dude, it's like sold out, you know. So these are things, so I'm just like looking for new things and like new fun things, and just you know, I just love seeing what's happening in the restaurant, you know, world. You know, we're doing all this new stuff with like the wheat, you know, we're doing all like the milling right in the restaurant now. I mean, that's opened up a whole new world. So like, man, we're just getting started, I feel.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Everyone, you can go see Mark all over Philly.
I'm everywhere.
You cannot escape his restaurants. And of course, Vetri on Spruce Street, about to celebrate its 20th anniversary. Yeah.
Next year, man.
Congratulations. Everyone,
thanks so much.
Please join us every Tuesday here on Heritage Radio for new episodes of The Line.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.